Well, hey, everybody, we are so excited to have you join us here from all over our city, all over our nation, and all over the world. How cool is that? Whether you're here on our online platform, and this is your new normal, or you are used to being in the seats here in the venue, and you're just continuing to be online because you're not ready to go to in-person services, we're so excited you're joining us here today at Crosspoint Online. Now, a couple things. We would love to stay connected with you. And so if you can scroll up on the stream there, and there's a button that says Stay Informed. And if you don't mind hitting that and giving us your name and your email address, that would be awesome. And what this will do is it will allow us to keep you in the loop of what's happening here, allow me to communicate with you and our team to communicate with you on things that are happening as we continue through this season. Secondly, as you know, the world around us is changing. In fact, this last week was really a difficult week here in our country. For one, we passed over 100,000 deaths from the COVID virus, and likely your family, just as my family, knows people who have been touched by this, lives who have been touched, lives that have been taken. And so we just want you to know that we're praying for you, we're alongside you, and we're here if there's anything we can do for you. And then secondly, our hearts are just broken for what took place in Minneapolis this past week with George Floyd and the hatred and the racism that is just ravaging our country. And I don't even really know how to put words to that right now other than our hearts are bleeding, they're broken, and this is something that we want to continue to have a conversation on. And we think God's heart is bleeding. His heart is broken for what's happening in our world and right here in our country. So I want to invite you to come back and join us next weekend here at Crosspoint as we're going to dive into this a bit deeper, have a conversation on racism here in our country. Because we believe as we reimagine another tomorrow and a new tomorrow, that it needs to be a tomorrow that includes everybody. So I hope to see you here next weekend. We are so excited you're here with us today, tuning in through the digital online platform. And if we have not had a chance to meet, my name's Kurt. And if you're here for the first time, welcome. We are so excited you're joining us. If you're here every week, welcome back. And we'd love to connect with you. So reach down to that connection card or up to the button that says Stay Informed. Let us know a little about yourself so we can connect with you. Now, we are in week two of this series, Imagine Tomorrow. And we are looking at how we have this blank canvas in front of us. And we have the opportunity to reinvent, reimagine, re-architect, re-engineer what tomorrow looks like. And so very excited about what we're going to be talking about today. Now, how many of us have heard a guy by the name of Stephen Covey? Just out of curiosity. Yeah, many of you, I see that. Stephen Covey, best-selling author, you probably know his book, The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. In that book, he gives us a great, great visual illustration that I just really want to remind us of. You've probably seen this before. But he reminds us of how, you know, we have, our life is like a jar. And there are certain things that are super important to us, 4 or 5 really big things, family, friends, maybe our marriage, relationship with our kids, our faith, maybe our career, and how we need to make sure that these things make it into the jar, which represents our life, before the other things. Because if we allow the other things into the jar, we're not going to fit the big things that matter into the jar. And so these other little pebbles kind of represent all the small things in life, you know, our hobbies, our interests, you know, being on Facebook, video gaming, whatever it is that we like to do. And if we start there and then we try to fit in things like family relationships are really important and our marriage, which is really important, before long, we realize we can't do that. And so he shows us that the way we do this is we make sure the big things are in the jar, the things that we value the most, and then we allow all the other things to kind of fill in around that. And this amazing thing happens. We can have all the things that are important to us and more. Now, you know, it's crazy because as Americans, we have this crazy idea that we think the more the better. And so we fill this thing all the way to the top. I'm guilty of this. I like to live this way. And so we just want to experience as much as possible till it's overflowing. And we want to have it all. And see, here's what's happened over these past 11 weeks. It's like the giant reset button has been hit and all of this just kind of was dumped out in front of us. And what's so cool about this right now is that you and I, we actually have the opportunity. I mean, this has all kind of been deconstructed. And you and I stand at a unique opportunity in our lives where we get to begin to reconstruct what we want. What are the big things we want in our lives? What are the things we've discovered we really value? Now, Here's the thing. You know, all over our country, around the United States and our communities, we have people that are making appointments, hundreds of people, thousands of people, making appointments with counselors, therapists, pastors. And really what they're trying to do is say, you know, I have problems and I want to go see a pastor and I want to tell you, here's what's going on in my life. I want to see a counselor and I want you to fix it. I need you to give me the solution. I need you to fix this thing for me. And here's the thing, and a really wise pastor, a really wise counselor, they're not going to necessarily tell you this up front, but a lot of these things in our lives that are problems can't be fixed, all right? I mean, we don't need a fix. They can't be fixed. What needs to happen is we need a change in direction. We need a different direction. We need to move and begin to live in a different direction. And if I could get just a bit personal for a moment, you may be a person who has been living, honestly, in the wrong direction. And this season that we've been in, as you begin to evaluate what are the things that are important, you begin to maybe even realize this. And see, the interesting thing about this is you could be living in the wrong direction and you could be the happiest you've ever been in your life. Because sometimes we're going in the wrong direction, we don't even realize it at first. I mean, isn't it true, like when you're driving somewhere, when you begin to get lost, like you don't know exactly when you're lost. I mean, all of a sudden it kind of hits you, and it's possible, this is why it's so cool that you're tuning in with us today. It's possible that you are lost or maybe you're heading in the wrong direction and you don't even know it because, see, sometimes the consequences don't begin to show up until later. And then all of a sudden you discover, you're like, oh my gosh, I'm lost. Okay, I want to fix. I want to be there right now. I want to get to a new place. And you want a solution. And the wise people around you say, well, there's not really something to fix. What needs to happen is you need to begin to head in a different direction. And see, here's the cool thing. You and I are at a unique place where we get to begin to decide, okay, what am I going to rebuild? What am I going to begin to make sure are the core things in my life as we build out of the season that we're in? And so, big idea today, I want us to see this idea that Jesus was a jock when it came to rebuilding. I mean, it is something he did. In fact, when you think about what it means to rebuild, Jesus and his family, I mean, they were mad builders. Consider this. Sociologist Rodney Stark, he says this. He says, it appears that his parents, I mean Jesus' parents, occupied a prominent place in the community and that they were sufficiently well off to have had property in Capernaum as well as Nazareth. They also were able to go to Jerusalem every year for Passover, as we read in Luke 2:41, something that most families could not afford. Now, this might be a side of Jesus that you've never considered, all right? Because when you think of Jesus, you think, well, this isn't where he started. I mean, you think back to the Christmas story, his family didn't have anything, right? I mean, they were poor. They didn't have a place to have a baby. They gave birth in a manger. They couldn't even afford a blanket. They had to wrap him in strips of cloth. But now, a few years later, we get a glimpse into his life and things have changed a bit. All right, they've began to build things. They knew how to build things. They knew how to recover out of where they were, how to get ahead, how to rebound. And see, many of us, this isn't the picture we have of Jesus. We're like, well, he was just a carpenter. I mean, you know, I don't know that he's ultimately successful. Well, not necessarily. We'll get back to the carpenter thing in a moment. See, most of us, we're influenced by the paintings that we've seen, you know, given, or maybe what people have said about Jesus, people like preachers that have said certain things about Jesus, that maybe don't really understand even what it means to start something or to build something. And so many of our images of Jesus, honestly, are just unbiblical. In fact, let me give you a few examples of this, some of the images that we think about when we think about Jesus. Here's one right here. This is a spooky Jesus. I don't know if you've ever seen this. Apparently, Jesus liked cupcakes a lot, though I don't even know what that is. It almost looks like it is a heart with a cross stuck in it in his hand. That is even more spooky. And he's white, which he's definitely not white, being from the Middle East. But nonetheless, these are the images that we often have of Jesus. Here's another one right here. This is Maybelline Jesus. This is Jesus with guy liner, or he probably manscapes. I don't know. I mean, you know, probably not exactly the picture of who Jesus was. Then we have bulimic Jesus. This is from the movie Jesus of Nazareth. And you see this one, and I'm like, my word, the dude, he probably needs, you know, Prozac to get through the day. I mean, he looks like he's struggling, and he needs to eat something. I mean, certainly he just doesn't look well. This Jesus doesn't look well at all right here. Maybe you have seen this one before. This is Lucy in the Sky with Jesus. Remember Lucy the lamb? You know, Jesus liked to pet lambs a lot, probably kittens too. I don't know. We often think of him sometimes in this way. Here's one. This is the good old red-blooded American Jesus. How about that one right there? This is Jesus teaching gun safety to a toddler. How about that one, right? Because that's how we all think of Jesus. I don't care who you are. That's funny right there when you think about that. Here's the thing. Have you ever seen an image of Jesus building something? Have you ever seen an image of Jesus, balancing accounts? Have you ever seen Jesus interacting with his employees? Have you ever seen Jesus, putting in a bid for a project that he wants to complete? Probably not. These images may be very, very foreign to us. But see, here's what I want us to see today. Here's what I want to submit to us. Jesus was a builder. He was a jack builder. He knows how to build things. And we can take cues from him in terms of how to build and rebuild our lives. And so, as we think about this, so often we go, I don't know, Jesus, he doesn't get my work. He doesn't get my business. He doesn't necessarily know what it's like to make a sale in my industry. He was just a carpenter, right? Just a lowly carpenter, which he certainly wasn't. First of all, carpenters are not lowly. That's a noble, noble job. Secondly, he's not a carpenter. It was mentioned one time in the gospel accounts. One time is enough. And the words that they use there, at least the words in the Greek language, don't even necessarily point to being a carpenter. Here's what it says in Mark 6:3. It says, they said, isn't this the carpenter? Isn't this Mary's son, the brother of James, Joseph, Judas, and Simon? So Jesus had four younger brothers. And the word translated in the Greek language right there, carpenter, is actually the word tektron, which means, it means someone who has great skill, all right? Somebody who's very skilled in their craft. G.I. Packer, who is a great ancient theologian, here's what he said on this. He said, though carpenter is the common rendering here, tekton could equally mean mason or smith, as indeed some of the church fathers took it, or it could mean that Joseph and Jesus were builders so that both carpentry and masonry would have been among their skills. And this makes a lot of sense to me right here, right? First of all, just a couple reasons. One, you talk about things that you know. Right? If you spend any time around me, you're going to hear about four things. You're going to hear about Jesus, you're going to hear about sports, you're going to hear about Disney, and you're going to hear a lot of seventh grade humor, because those are the things I know. Those are things I know how to talk about. I don't know how to talk about the global economy. You're not going to hear me talking about, cybersecurity or crocheting or fashion or, shopping, any of that stuff. I don't know that stuff. You talk about what you know. Jesus didn't talk about carpentry at all. In fact, only just one time. One time in the gospel accounts, he talks about, if you're going to judge somebody, maybe I'd take the plank out of your eye first. It's the only illustration he gives. But see, second, he does use a lot of building illustrations. In fact, he's even likened at one point to the chief cornerstone, which tells us he knows something about building. Another time in Luke chapter 14, he said this. He said, whoever does not bear his own cross and come after me cannot be my disciple. For which of you, desiring to build a tower, does not first sit down and count the cost, whether he has enough to complete it? Otherwise, when he has laid a foundation and is not able to finish, all who see it begin to mock him. See, Jesus understands something right here about building. All right, this makes a lot of sense. He is a builder. And regardless of what he built or whatever we think he may have built, this to some degree, this is conjecture. But here's the thing, who wouldn't have loved to have a house that Jesus built, right? How many of us out there would not have loved to have a house that Jesus and his crew built? Seriously, think about it. Think of the word of mouth advertising on the street for Jesus. People would be like, listen, he shows up exactly when he said he'd be there. He's there right when he said. It's like his yes is yes and his no is no. And I tell you what, when there's a flaw, he owns it and he fixes it. There would have been a buzz in the region with Jesus as a builder. And we see Jesus not only, using building metaphors, he uses business metaphors. He talks about building things. Over and over. I just referenced one a moment ago. He talks about, accounting the cost. What builder goes out and starts something without first considering the cost? You won't get into a project and not be able to finish it. He obviously has done some difficult, difficult projects. In Matthew 20, he talks about paying his employees. Have you ever thought of Jesus as being a boss? He has to pay and negotiate with his employees. Luke chapter 18, he talks about forgiving financial debts. We probably, at some point, somebody owed him something for work, and he had to deal with, how do I forgive financial debts? Here's what we know. Jesus knows how to build something. His life built a movement that lasts even yet today. Even yet today. Still growing strong. Right here in the middle of the COVID-19 pandemic, his movement is still moving. In fact, we had some friends just this past week that are not really religious people, and they asked about Crosspoint. I said, hey, how's Crosspoint going? And he said, hey, good, great. And I said, well, didn't you guys have to shut down? He said, well, the church doesn't shut down. I mean, we just moved what we were doing to a different platform. I mean, Jesus started a movement that is still going, even in the midst of this. He built something and knew how to build something that lasts. And see, I believe that there are physical ways that he developed this understanding. The first 30 years of his life, I think he learned how to build something. I think he learned how to make the most, and I think those skills and those traits carried into the last 3 years of his life when he became a rabbi. Listen, you don't just begin building into people the way he did without having a foundation of how to make a go of it. He understood that the direction of your life, the things that you're about, lead you to a destination. This is the path right here. This is the principle of the path. And man, I'm telling you, when you begin to understand this framework and apply this to your life, oh my gosh, God gets happy. Things begin popping in your life, and you begin to reimagine tomorrow. And as we think about the person of Jesus, I think we need to emulate him and what it means to build something that lasts as we think about rebuilding tomorrow. So here's what I want to do. For the next few minutes, I want to look at this word picture that Jesus gives us. This picture he talks about building. And this is one of his more famous sermons. This is known as the Sermon on the side of this mountain, and so they creatively called it the Sermon on the Mount. You guys are really sharp. You're right on it today. Sermon on the Mount. This is Matthew. I don't know if he's scribing this out or he's a tax gatherer, if he has his scribes, for his business doing this. Whatever it is, he gets to the end of this long sermon, and he's covered like everything. And then he tells this parable at the end, and it really illustrates this idea of the principle of the path. And so Jesus is kind of wrapping up, and here's what he says. He says, therefore, meaning I'm kind of at the end, I'm summarizing. He says, therefore, everyone who hears these words of mine and actually does them, meaning anybody who listens to them, sometimes we hear them, we're like, oh, man, that is a really good idea. I don't think I'm going to do it, but man, that's a good thought to think about. Jesus is like, no, the goal is doing. See, the extent of some of our religious experience is you come to church or you log in online and you feel really guilty and then you go home or you go on to something else and then you log in again. And then you feel really guilty, and then you go on to something else. He says, no, don't do that. That's not the point. He says, I want you to do something. I want you to put into practice the things that I'm talking about. Because when you do this, something happens. He says, therefore, everyone who hears these words of mine and puts them into practice, he says, will immediately experience relief financially, relationally, and all the alleys that come after that. That's not what he said. I mean, that's what we want him to say. No, he said this. He said, therefore, anyone who hears these words of mine and puts them into practice will discover a fix for all their problems. No, he didn't say that as well. He doesn't provide a fix to our problems. See, this is why you ought to follow Jesus. See, Jesus, he never does that. He doesn't say, hey, here's the fix, here's the solution. He actually invites us to live in a different direction. He says, I want you to point your life in a different direction. He points us forward. See, here's what he actually said. He said, therefore, everyone who hears these words of mine and puts them into practice is like a wise man. Not necessarily a smart man, though he could have been smart. Not necessarily a talented man, though he could have been talented. Not necessarily even a resourceful man, though he certainly could have been resourceful. He says, he's a wise man. What does he mean by wise man? Well, see, a wise man is somebody who understands. A wise woman, wise student, we've covered this before. Somebody who's wise is somebody who understands that all of life is connected. That yesterday is connected to today, and that today is a pretty good predictor of tomorrow. A wise person understands that to a certain extent, you can actually predict what tomorrow looks like. All right, meaning there's a process to this. He says, therefore, everyone who hears these words of mine and puts them into practice is like a wise man who, and look at the word right here, built. Now, building something includes a process. Have you ever built anything? I mean, think about it. What's it take? It takes time, right? I mean, some of us are like, man, if it takes me more than an hour, I'm out. I'm hiring somebody. Because we don't like to take the time. He says, a wise man is a man who built his house. Now, huge, huge connect right here. See, in this parable, this idea of house is equivalent to your life. All right, when he says life, house, he's referring to your life. Your relationships, your money, your relationship with your spouse, with your kids, your faith, anything and everything that's important to you. All right, he says, a wise man is somebody who listens to Jesus, says, not only am I going to hear him, I'm actually going to do, I'm going to put into practice what he says. He says, this is a wise man. He's building his life, his house on something that's firm. And then he goes on and says something that you and I can't really relate to. He says, he who built his house on the rock, which we can't relate to this because we don't really build houses and we don't build on rock. But see, here's what's unique. In this first century context, everybody understood exactly what he was talking about. See, in this first century culture, they're like, oh yeah, you know what that means? That means the rock represented the hard way. The rock, it represented the expensive way, the time-consuming way. It's the way that initially there's no return on your investment. When you put labor into it, you're not going to see the reward right away, but you're building something that has a long-term life. And then he introduces the second character into this made-up story, this parable. And you've probably heard this before if you went to Sunday school, or even if you didn't, if you went with your grandma to church as a kid, you maybe remember hearing this story as a kid. He says, but to everyone who hears these words of mine and does not put them into practice is like a foolish man. Okay, well, what's a foolish man? Well, a foolish man is somebody who lives like their life is disconnected. Right, a foolish man says, well, now is now and later is later. And a foolish person, you know, says, well, even though, you know, something happened in this relationship or something happened to my marriage or happened to my relationship with my daughter or my son or something happened financially, we treat ourselves like an electronic device. We just think we can power ourselves down, shut off for a bit. We can kind of, you know, reboot up later and after everything's blown over, and then everything's going to be fine. We can go on with our life. And we understand that's not how life works, right? We go, okay, that he says that's what a foolish man is. He doesn't understand that yesterday's connected to today. So your Heavenly Father, I think he looks at it and he's like, hey, you're not a device. You're not a toaster. You're not an Xbox. All right? You were made in my image. You're complex. You're precious. You're unique. And it's all connected. It's all connected. That's why I'm encouraging you to change directions. It says, he who built his house on the sand, which again doesn't mean anything to us, but his first century audience would have gone, oh, we know exactly what that means. The sand means the easy way, the quick way. It means what everybody else is doing. So when he said this, they would have just moaned and go, oh my gosh, this is not going to end well. See, the assumption of the foolish person is that today's weather is going to be tomorrow's weather. And it hardly ever is. In fact, in this case, it wasn't. He goes on, he says, the rain came down and the streams rose and the winds blew and beat against that house, and it fell with a great crash. And the implication right there is no fix when things crash. Like, hey, can I have a fix? You're like, no. Really, you really got to go back and kind of do what you should have done in the first place. You have to rebuild. I don't want to rebuild. I mean, rebuilding takes a lot of time. I mean, it takes way too much time. I just want a fix. I want a solution right now. If I rebuild, it's going to take a long time. And it's like he's going, exactly. See, when the house falls down, you don't fix it. You have to rebuild one rock at a time, one stone at a time. And then he goes on, he says, but when the rains came and the streams rose and the winds beat against it, now he's referring to the first house, the one that was built on the rock, Jesus says it did not fall because, man, he's so lucky. That guy, his house didn't fall. He got unscathed through this situation, right? Isn't that what we think? Man, why'd so-and-so? They don't seem to be impacted by this. I mean, man, it must just be luck. They got the luck of the draw right here. Things always go their way, right? I just never get the breaks. God obviously loves them more than he loves me. And it's like Jesus looks at us. He's like, come on, come on, come on, come on. You know how this works. You know my Father put the world together in a certain way. There's a certain predictability in the world. And while you don't have control over a lot of things, as we've learned over the last number of weeks, you still have some control. All right, you have enough control to know that there's certain things I can do today that will actually impact my tomorrow and the day after that. Jesus says it did not fall because it had its foundation on the rock. There's a cause and effect. There's a sowing and reaping. It's the principle of the path. Now, I love how he ends this. It says, when Jesus had finished saying all these things, the crowds were amazed at his teaching because he taught as one who had authority. They're like, finally, somebody that makes sense. Finally, somebody that's given us some handles, you know, that we can grab onto and we begin to understand how to apply this to our life. And then it says, and not as their teachers of the law. So here's the question I want to leave us with this weekend. All right, because see, we've just had this giant reset button hit where we're in this process where we get to rebuild the things that are important to us. And we get to fill in around that. And we've had a lot of time over the last 11 weeks for some self-reflection. You know, for us to just take some time and consider the direction of our life. And so here's the question I want you to think about. Is the direction you have been heading, is it getting you where you want to go? I mean, I want you to think about this question. Is the direction you've been going, the pathway you've been on, is it getting you where you want to go? Because see, you and I, we just had the moment we've longed for our whole life. How many times have we said, man, I wish I could start over. I wish I could just have a do-over. I wish everything could be back and I could begin to rebuild. We just got one of these moments. I mean, all the activity was removed from our lives, all the, you know, many of the relationships, many of the commitments that we had. I mean, our work got totally upended. And you spent probably more time in your home than you have in 10 years. I mean, we have the chance now to look at this. And so we need to dig into this question. With all we've been thinking about and considering and realizing and discovering, is the direction that I've been heading getting me to where I want to go? Because see, this is the principle of the path. Your direction will determine your destination. And right now, you and I get to ask even a bigger question as we think about rebuilding. And that's this question right here. What direction do I want to go in for my tomorrow? That's a big question. And as Stephen Covey reminds us, he says, you know, you got to figure out what are the big things? What are the big rocks? What are the big things that have become really important to me? And what are some of the small things? What are some of the small pebbles? What are the things that I thought were so important? I couldn't live without them. And then I've realized over the last, you know, 10 or 11 weeks, my gosh, as important as that may have been, I've realized that maybe it's not as important as I thought it was. See, you have a heavenly Father who cares so much about you. He watches over you. And when he sees us, you know, beginning to head in the wrong direction, he'll hint to us. He'll warn us. He'll send people to kind of interrupt us. He'll even at times bring everything to a screeching halt like we've had over these last number of weeks. And he's gotten our attention, right? And here you are tuning in to me right now. How about that? Who would have known? And he loves you. And yet he's not going to violate your freedom. He's not just going to impose himself on you. This is why the invitation of Jesus is the same invitation he gave in the first century, is one word. And it wasn't stop it. It wasn't change. It wasn't fix it. It wasn't don't. It was a single word, follow. Follow. Will you follow me? And Jesus says, man, I have a dream for your life, and I'm telling you, if you will live and follow what I'm calling you to, you will build a rock-solid house. And you're going to build a rock-solid life, and eventually, I mean, it may not happen right away, but eventually you're going to discover following Jesus will eventually make you so much better at life, and it will make your life so much better. And see, here's what I know about you. What I know about you is you're going to end up someplace. You're going to end up someplace relationally. You're going to end up someplace in your marriage. You're going to end up someplace in your relationship with your kids. You're going to end up someplace in your work life. There's a destination, and the question is, you know, everybody ends up somewhere. I want you to end up somewhere on purpose. And I guarantee you, if you will follow Jesus and be sensitive to his spirit as you think about rebuilding and what am I going to put back in this jar, not only will you end up someplace on purpose, you will end up someplace with a purpose because direction determines destination. So how do we do this? How do we walk this out? Well, here's what I want us to do this week. I want to give you a next step. Reach down, hit that connection card. And there's a couple down there returning next weekend. Obviously, we'd love that. It's going to be a big conversation. Hope you'll join us as we dive into this whole issue of racism and how that's affecting our communities. But for this week, and I thought about doing this in this room, and not that we can't, but I feel like if when we do these moments, and we say, okay, what are the five big things? What are the big five big rocks I'd put in my jar? And we do it here, and oh man, you know, we have this moment, we write them down, put them in the jar, okay, I identify them. We go on with our day, we go on with our life, we get out of this moment, and we kind of forget about this. So, and not that we're not sincere in this moment, I just think God wants to give us a little more depth on this. So here's what I want you to do. This week, will you get alone for 5 minutes, 30 minutes, whatever time you have and you want to devote to this? Will you get alone and would you make a list of your top four or five things that you want to make sure you're building into your life as we rebuild into this next season? You can get a stone. These stones are from my backyard. You can get a stone, use a Sharpie, and put them on the stone if you need to. Put them on your nightstand. Put them somewhere where you can see them, on your desk, your family, your faith, you know, probably relationships, your health. I mean, what are the things you want to make sure are in here? List all those things out. Then I want you to go and read Matthew chapter 7, verse 24 to 28, what we looked at today. And then I want you to just pray. I want you to say, okay, God, I've kind of made this list. I want you to just speak to me. Is this going to build a solid foundation? Is this going to take me to a different destination? Is this going to take me to a destination that's built on a firm foundation? And I know it's going to take some time. What do I need to let go of? What are some of the pebbles? What are the things that, man, I thought I couldn't do without that I've discovered? Maybe I don't need to fill my life up to the brim. Maybe I've discovered I need a little more margin. Where else do you want me to invest my life, Jesus? And I promise you that as you do this, and as you trust your Heavenly Father in this rebuilding process, He knows how to build something that lasts. And as you listen to Him, and as you follow Him, and as you build your life on Him, I guarantee you, you will reimagine a different tomorrow, and you will build on a firm, firm foundation. So that's the challenge this week. All right, let me pray for us, and we're going to sing one more song. God, I just thank you for this moment. I thank you for the opportunity to be here right now. Man, a lot of things going on around us right now, God. A lot of things in our community, a lot of things that are breaking our hearts, a lot of things we're experiencing even for the first time, a lot of things we're experiencing over and over that we just can't seem to get right. Heavenly Father, this week, we want to be the kind of people that build our lives on you. There may be some of us who need to change a direction this week. And so I just pray, God, that you would give us a sign, give us a clue, that you'd give us a nudge, help us to see that, or maybe realize that maybe the direction we've been going, the things we put in the jar, maybe they're not going to get us to the place that's that firm foundation. And God, we want to lean on you this week. And I know as we set some time aside, there's going to be distractions. There's going to be things you're going to try to prevent us from taking this time. And so God, I just pray that you would help us, even as we walk out of this moment, to put it on our calendar. Here's where I'm going to process. Here's where I'm going to reflect. I'm going to sit down and think of how, okay, Jesus, what do I want to build my life on as we go forward? And God, when we build that on you, it will not go wrong. You will not let us down. And I pray that every single person that goes through this experience this week will see that. And God, I pray that you will give us the wisdom as we go through this process to build with the right foundation, which is you, because you build things that last. So God, as we follow you this week, give us the courage, give us the wisdom to know what to do and how to do it. We pray these things in your name, Jesus.